You are listening to WRFG 89.3 Atlanta. Welcome to Alternative Perspectives. Welcome to Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting Atlanta's queer community. I'm your host, Greg Bossin. Thank you very much for listening. And thank you, Carrie, by the way. That was quite interesting. It was nice to hear you talk some. I know you always have guests. It's nice to hear you talk. So, Carrie has some important things to say. She's very, very cool, and it's nice to share the studio with her. I love her. Well, apparently I love you now. All right, see you later. All right. The opinions expressed here are those of myself, my guests, and do not necessarily represent the views of WRFG, its employees, board, volunteers, funders, or listeners. Tonight's show, hold on to your seats. Tonight's show is on abortion in Georgia. That's right, I said it, on abortion in Georgia. On May 7th of this year, Governor Brian Kemp signed into law one of the most restrictive pieces of anti-abortion legislation in the country, outlawing abortion at 6 weeks before many women even know that they are pregnant. Now, this show, Alternative Perspectives, is typically reserved for issues affecting the queer community. But this law comes with language regarding something called personhood that has far-reaching implications for not only the straight community, but for gay couples attempting to have children through in vitro fertilization and the like. And, you know, another thing I just want to say about this show is, you know, and I've taken over here for a few months, the show is about issues affecting the queer community. It doesn't necessarily mean that if there is an issue that affects more than the queer community, that we won't cover it. And I feel like being a progressive radio station and covering topics that are progressive in nature, we need to talk about this issue, and I think that that's vitally important. Before we get into that, there's the normal segment that I always like to have.
News of the queer.
I know that's right.
Oh, no, she didn't say what?
And, all right, so I don't know if that's getting old or not. It's not to me yet. So we're going to start. So this is with a segment where we do some news. We're going to start locally, and then we're going to move out nationally. Now, this first piece is local. It happened. It affects people in Atlanta, but also in Britain. So this happened last month. Atlanta gay couple found themselves the victims of an outdated State Department policy after their British-born daughter was denied citizenship in April. So Derek Mize, who's a citizen by birth, and Jonathan Gregg, who is a citizen by marriage. Jonathan Gregg was born in England. They met in 2014. They married in 2015. A close friend, who is British and American, served as their surrogate, and the daughter was born at a British hospital in 2018, according to the New York Times. So we've got a couple, one of which, well, they're both citizens of this country, but one of them is a citizen by marriage, Jonathan. They applied for citizenship for their daughter and received a letter from the U.S. Embassy in London saying that the father, because the sperm was donated by Jonathan Gregg, who was he's the citizen by marriage. He had lived in Britain most of his life before moving to the U.S. to be with Mize. He didn't have enough years in America, is what they said. So basically, what the deal is the State Department regards births from assisted reproductive technology as out of wedlock if the source of the sperm and the egg do not match the married parents. So the egg And the sperm did not come completely from the married parents, which are James and Jonathan. The sperm came from Jonathan, but not the egg. It came from a woman who's not part of the marriage. So if that's the case, if the child is not from the parents directly that are married, then there is an extra requirement for transmitting citizenship that includes that the biological parent, in this case Jonathan, has spent at least 5 years in the United States. But he has not spent 5 years in the United States. He's only spent 3 years. So opponents of the policy, which date back to the late 1990s, argue that it no longer aligns with the current societal understanding and the legal definition of marriage. There are several lawsuits pending against the State Department over the policy. I didn't even tell you, but oh, maybe I did. This is Atlanta. This is an Atlanta couple. So that's weird, isn't it? I think it's odd. And actually, you know what? I'm going to do this now. We're going to talk about abortion. And I have with me Barbara Ann Luttrell, who is the Director of Communications at Planned Parenthood Southeast. And I want to make sure that people can hear you, Barbara Ann. So say hello.
Hello.
And move the mic a little bit closer to you and speak up a little bit.
How's that?
Yeah, okay, that's a little bit better. All right, this way you can participate in the discussion as I go through these news items. So that was local. All right, and then we've got national. This really struck me. So this happened last week. The Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, is setting up a commission at the State Department to redefine human rights as based on what the department is describing as natural law and natural rights. So the move has alarmed human rights activists, especially those focused on LGBT rights and women's rights, who fear that it will mean an end of promoting protections for both groups around the world. So basically, the State Department has an interest in promoting human rights, at least historically they have. So now the State Department feels as though they need to look at that and decide what is a human right. And the thing that's unnerving is the term natural law is what they're using. This term natural law has concerned some advocacy groups and department staff, as it is interpreted in this case as God-given or religiously based rights that affect issues like sexuality, abortion rights, and more. In particular, the phrase, now this phrase, natural law, has been prominent in the work of Princeton professor Robert George. Now, Robert George is important because he was instrumental in creating this committee, and he plans on being on this committee. But Robert George has, he is the author of a book in 1999 called In Defense of Natural Law, where he argued against homosexuality and abortion rights in favor of religious liberty. And George also wrote the original concept note that outlined a vision for the commission. So we've got someone, and I don't know how many other people, I think there's 15 people on the commission, but someone who is definitely not for protecting the rights of the queer community and others, and he's sitting on a commission in the State Department trying to decide which human rights are natural.
Sounds like another way to take us backwards instead of taking us forwards.
Yes, which is... You know, that's the pattern these days.
Surprising.
Yeah, it's a little bit scary. So I like to do good news as well, Barbara Ann. So this happened about a week and a half ago on Friday the 25th in Geneva, Switzerland. The World Health Organization has passed legislation that will no longer categorize being transgender as a mental health condition. The move has been said to have the potential to liberate trans and non-binary people worldwide, making the route to legal transition draw closer, or maybe the route. The decision was approved on Friday, the 25th, by the World Health Assembly that represents 194 member states and should trickle down to national policies. However, an evolving scientific understanding of gender and numerous advocates and transgender advocates around the world speaking up for the lives of trans people have been key in seeing this result. So basically, gender identity disorder has been removed from the diagnostic manual and will have a liberating effect on transgender people worldwide.
Yay!
Yeah, I think that's great. I'm wondering if we voted for it. I doubt it. It didn't say, but these days, I doubt it. And then finally, just for fun, this happened on Thursday, May the 23rd. I know it's a bit ago, but I broke my foot, and so I've been out of commission for a little while, so this is still relevant. I looked it up a week ago and then couldn't do the show. But anyway, so just for fun, a new Gillette advertisement shows the moment a loving dad teaches his transgender son, and you can see this online, how to shave for the first time. The global shaving brand Gillette casually dropped the video on Thursday, May the 23rd, featuring Samson Brown with his dad. Whenever, wherever, however it happens, your first shave is special, they wrote in the caption. Samson says in the video, I'm at the point in my manhood where I'm actually happy. It's not just myself transitioning, it's everybody around me transitioning. Gillette made international headlines earlier this year when it released a short film on toxic masculinity. The global shaving brand made a big statement about the rise of the Me Too movement. Bullying, harassment, Gillette wrote in a caption to the YouTube video, is this the best a man can get? And then they added, it's only by challenging ourselves to do more that we can get closer to our best, to say the right thing and to act the right way.
So, way to go.
Yeah, yeah. We've got, you know, you're in trouble when you have big corporations that are doing more to further human rights than the government is.
These are crazy times.
Yeah, it is.
But way to go, Gillette.
Yeah, no, I think that is just awesome. So for those of you that are just joining in, you are listening to Alternative Perspectives. I am Greg Bossin, your host. And the show tonight is going to be about abortion, which is quite shocking, I know. But we're going to do it. All right. Be right back.
Isn't the best place to find the lovers, so the bar is where I go. Mm-hmm. Me and my friends at the table doing shots, tripping fast, and then we talk slow. Mm-hmm. And you come over and start up a conversation with just me, and trust me, I'll give it a chance. Now take my hand, stop it, and the man on the jukebox, and then we start to dance. And now I'm singing like, girl, you know I want your love. Your love was handmade for somebody like me. Come on now, follow my lead. I may be crazy, don't mind me. Say, boy, let's not talk too much. Grab on my waist and put that body on me. I'm coming now, follow my lead. Come, coming now, follow my lead. Mm-hmm. I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too, I'm in love with your body. And last night you were in my room, and now my bedsheets smell like you. Every day discovering something brand new.
Right, and we are back. For those of you that are just joining us, you are listening to Alternative Perspectives. I am Greg Bossin, your host, and we are speaking. Well, I've missed that. We are speaking with Barbara Ann Littrell, who is the communications director at Planned Parenthood Southeast, about abortion, and in particular about the law that passed last month. And actually, I forgot, I have a little thing I wanted to say. All right, let me get back to it here. I have all kinds of papers. So on May 7th of this year, Governor Brian Kemp signed into law one of the most restrictive pieces. I already said it that way. There's more information. I've lost my papers. I'm all disorganized. And there we go. All right, so the bill, but Georgia passed this law. And the law Brian Kemp signed, it's House Bill 481. It's called the Heartbeat Bill. Is that the real name of it, the Heartbeat
no,
Bill?
No, it's not. And actually, I'm glad that you brought that up. But that sure. is language used by anti-abortion organizations and individuals. Mm-hmm. And actually, we should call this what it is, mm-hmm. which is basically an outright ban, because it bans abortion at 6 weeks, which is before most people even know they're pregnant.
Right.
So to call it anything else is really disingenuous and not accurate.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, you sound awesome. So I did look into it a little bit after we talked a little bit earlier today, Barbara Ann and I. So in total, there are 9 states so far that have passed some sort of law restricting abortion dramatically in an attempt to force the issue up to the Supreme Court with the intention of overturning Roe versus Wade. And they're not shy about saying that. Louisiana just signed a state ban on Thursday, which bans abortion at around 6 weeks. even in the cases of rape or incest. So get this, Barbara Ann and our listeners. Other states, there are 5 states that have abortion bans on the books now. Well, none of them are in practice yet. We'll get to that. But 5 other states that are banning abortion even in the case of rape and incest, and that would include Missouri, Alabama, Ohio, Mississippi, and then Louisiana. So I guess let's just start with the specifics of the bill. So what does the bill say? Just, you know, cursory. What is the bill trying to do?
Yeah. So House Bill 481, which was signed into law, is a 6-week abortion ban. So it bans the procedure after 6 weeks. It criminalizes doctors. So that means that any physician that provides an abortion could be sentenced to 10 years in prison. It also is a little interesting and a little bit different than what we've seen in other states, because it has this personhood bent to it. And what personhood really means is that a fertilized egg or an embryo has all the same rights as you and me, or perhaps more in states like Georgia.
Is this just a sentence or a clause that was put in there? Because I don't know that you need to ban abortion. You can ban abortion in a law without saying that. So I think...
Yes, that was added in intentionally. Personhood has never been tested in the courts. So it was intentional by the bill sponsor and the authors of this bill to wedge that in there. So in an effort, really, to escalate this case to the Supreme Court. They think that this is going to give them an edge to get to the Supreme Court. I think it's more than a little hubristic to think so. There are already 12 other anti-abortion bills working their way to the Supreme Court ahead of this one, including one right now that's on the Supreme Court's desk out of Alabama. It's a method ban out of Alabama, and we're waiting for SCOTUS to determine whether or not they're going to take up that case. But yes, this personhood piece was put in specifically to try to sort of give them an edge or a leg up on the other cases that are already working their way through the court system.
So, I know I'm just kind of belaboring the point maybe, but it's interesting that the word, the term personhood didn't necessarily need, it's not used in applying the law. It's probably as a reason for it, like whereas we consider person...
How it's inserted into the bill is in deeming that any pregnancy at 6 weeks now has to be counted in population counts.
Oh.
Yeah. So it has, far-reaching implications, both in terms of tax implications, mm-hmm. but also with the census. It could also mean that women who have a miscarriage could be investigated. Could also mean that IVF, in vitro fertilization, which you talked about a little earlier, could be called into question. Because if a fertilized egg is then seen under the law as a person with all of the same rights as you and me, then that means that, you know, some of the embryos created during IVF would then be deemed a person in the eyes of the law.
Yeah, I mean, well, and I mean, and like you said, you had mentioned a tax deduction. I'm a CPA by trade, so I mean, does that mean that
both
we're...
of my parents are accountants? Really? In good company.
Really? So does that mean that, you know, we'll be able to get a deduction for them, that there's no longer a deduction for a dependent, but you do get a $2,000 credit? So I'm sure that the government or that the Republicans are not interested in making that happen, but specifically focused on a queer couple. So if there's a queer couple that has in vitro fertilization, so I guess what it does, that person or that embryo that is given a right, so perhaps those rights may supersede the rights of the couple.
That's right.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. so they lose
that's
the
right,
ability.
Just as, you know, just as in this bill, the pregnancy supersedes the rights of the pregnant person.
Right. So a judge could conceivably decide that a couple that has gone through in vitro fertilization, perhaps the fertilized egg is being carried by a surrogate or something, it's in the best interest of this person that they do not go to these parents. I could, you know, I
well, and in IVF, I think what the primary fear is that in IVF there are multiple eggs that are fertilized.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
And so then, in the eyes of the law, each of those would be a person.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there, this hasn't been played out, but there are all kinds of implications that could come along with that.
Yeah, and it's important to talk to let the listeners know. This is not, I mean, it's a law, but it's not in effect yet.
That's right.
So when does this Georgia law supposedly go into effect?
It's set to take effect in January of 2020,
mm-hmm.
but we, along with partners at ACLU of Georgia and the Center for Reproductive Rights and others, will file a lawsuit before that, likely later this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so we hope to block this in court and prevent it from ever taking effect. So it is really important to remind folks that abortion is still safe, legal, and available in Georgia. And in fact, it is safe and legal in all 50 states. And we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that that remains the case.
I'm wondering, and this may not be, but have you, the number of calls or the number of questions increased since this law is passed?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. So we cover Alabama, Georgia, and Mississippi, all the fun states.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So all three of which have enacted abortion bans this year. Mississippi and Georgia enacted 6-week abortion bans. Alabama enacted an outright abortion ban with no exceptions for rape and incest.
Mm-hmm.
And so as those, you know, bills were signed, our call center, which manages appointments and inquiries for all three states, was absolutely inundated
yes.
with calls from people saying, you know, I have an appointment. Do I need to cancel or move it up? From people saying, you know, I need to schedule an appointment. What do I do? Do I need to drive out of state? People were really terrified.
Yes.
And people who were in, you know, we had one person who was in a domestic violence situation and had an appointment already scheduled, and they were frantic on the phone wanting to know if their appointment was going to be
canceled.
Yeah, or canceled. And so our call center folks have been swamped with those calls, so much so that we had to set up an automated line that answered some of those questions and reassured folks that abortion is in fact still safe and legal. So, you know, in all three of our states, we see anti-abortion laws and regulations and similar things every year, right? But we've never seen anything this egregious,
mm-hmm.
and we've never seen the public react in such a terrified way as they have this year. It's been really stunning.
Yeah, yeah, it really, I mean, it's really, it's shaken a lot of people. And it's interesting, a couple of statistics, and you can correct me, but I believe, if I'm not mistaken,
One in four women will have an abortion by the time she's 45.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that number, it was more. It used to be 1 in 3.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you mentioned earlier that we were going to talk about abortion today and that's pretty scandalous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important for us to continue to talk about abortion and to make it not so scandalous.
Right.
Because it is just another healthcare service. It is one service in the full spectrum of reproductive healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be seen as such. And 1 in 4, that's a lot of people that you and I both know and love who have had abortions. And, you know, not everyone feels like they're in a safe and comfortable position to talk about their abortion or to talk about the issue at all. But for those of us who are comfortable and do feel like we are in a safe position to do so, we should, because we should normalize it and we should remove that shame and stigma that exists around women's healthcare writ large.
Yeah, no, definitely. And also, and it's interesting you'd say that, because I was speaking to well, my brother about this the other day, who's he's a conservative and a Republican, and he can't understand the connection between being pregnant and women's health. Like, you know, he's like, everybody, you know, people get pregnant all the time. It's no big deal. It's not really a health concern. So I'm wondering,
well,
what would you say?
Luckily for him, it's not a health concern for him, it
mm-hmm.
sounds like.
Right.
But, you know, what I would say to your brother is just that whether you're going to start a family or expand a family, or if you're going to pursue adoption, or if you're going to have an abortion, is a deeply personal healthcare decision. And it should be one that should be made by the person in consultation with their family and their doctor and their faith.
Yes.
Lawmakers are definitely not the experts, and it just shouldn't be up to me or to our elected officials to make that decision for someone else.
Yeah, it is interesting because the conservative side, when it comes to many issues, they don't want the government involved, right? But yet, not with this one, you know? It's just the opposite. And I don't know if we had talked about this before, but the argument about, you know, well, we feel that this is a life, and so we need to protect this life. Well, I think those protections, those same people are no longer interested in as soon as the baby comes out of the womb. Yeah.
And I think, you know, questions about when life begins are, mm-hmm. are deeply personal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for some people, that's based on science. For other people, that's based on religion.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is absolutely entitled to their opinion. But again, the bottom line is that the government shouldn't be making those deeply held decisions and beliefs for the people.
Definitely. Definitely. I agree with that. I know that not everybody agrees, and some of our listeners may not agree. And we're going to take a break here in a second. But I do want to take a moment just to acknowledge that there are very strong opinions on this on both sides. And I do understand that there are people that feel very strongly that they are interested, they are pro-life, as they say, because they are trying to protect a life. I know that there are people that feel that way. And I don't want to diminish, if there's a listener that does feel that way, I don't want to diminish their opinion. I just wish that there was a way that we could figure out a way to talk about this, you know, both sides, mm-hmm. with some compassion, you know, and some understanding. But anyway, well, thank you for that. And for those of you that are just listening, this is Alternative Perspectives. I'm Greg Bossen, and we are speaking with Barbara Ann Luttrell, who is with the Planned Parenthood Southeast, and she's a communications director. And I didn't know this. This is a lot, but you're apparently in charge of not one, not two, but three states, Alabama,
right.
Mississippi, and Georgia, which I would argue might be the three least states.
It's a wild ride.
Yeah, right? No, I'm quite sure that it is. So bless you for the work that you've done. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about abortion, kind of expand our discussion a little bit to get into women's health in general and what's happened over the years. Okay, so I'm excited about that. We'll be right back.
In Malibu, next to you. We watch the sun go down as we're walking. I'd spend the rest of my life just standing here talking. You explain the current as I just smile, hoping that you'll stay the same. Thank you.
listening to WRFG Atlanta Alternative Perspectives. I am Greg Bossen, your host, and we are speaking with Barbara and Latrell with Planned Parenthood Southeast about the abortion law that has just passed and other implications of that law. So, Barbara, I was just listing some statistics about women's health in general, reproductive health and others. So go ahead and share with our listeners what you shared with me.
Yeah, I was just saying that women are actually 50% more likely to die in childbirth than 30 years ago. And Black women in particular are 3 to 4 times more likely to die than white women. And you know, beyond pregnancy and childbirth, sexually transmitted infections are at a record high in the U.S. for the 4th year in a row. And, you know, that's because access to healthcare, particularly access to women's healthcare, is so hard to come by. 79 Georgia counties have no OBGYN at all. 9 Georgia counties have no doctor, period. So, you know, it's not a surprise when you look at the health outcomes that we see in Georgia, which are among the worst in the country. Georgia actually has the worst maternal mortality rate in the country.
Really?
We're last.
Wow.
And yet instead of working to expand access to health care and make sure that the citizens of this state have access to those services, our lawmakers chose to roll back access to health care and restrict it. That makes it very clear, and I think, you know, many lawmakers made it clear during legislative session that this has nothing to do with Georgians, it has nothing to do with what's best for the state or what's best for the people of the state. Like you mentioned earlier, this is all part of a national strategy to overturn Roe v. Wade and to outlaw safe legal abortion. There have actually been 33 states so far this year who have introduced bans.
Oh, wow.
Abortion bans, and 12 as of today have been enacted.
Wow.
So, you know, those are being fought in court, and again, Planned Parenthood and partners are doing everything in our power to make sure that those bills never take effect. But this is absolutely a political game, and the people of this state and the people of other states where we're seeing similar bans are just being used as pawns.
Yeah, and they're playing with women's health and with women's bodies.
And lives.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when you outlaw abortion, that doesn't mean that abortion goes away. It means
right.
that safe, legal abortion goes away, and people die.
Right, right. Well, I mean, the argument from the other side goes something like, well, you know, if you make methamphetamine illegal, people still do methamphetamine. So therefore, are you saying that we should make methamphetamine legal? I mean, that's the response that I get from the other side. It's a challenging topic. And now that I'm wondering about this, so how many abortion clinics are there in those three states that you cover? Do you know? How many are in Georgia?
In Georgia, there are 15.
Wow.
I think there are 5 abortion providers, or health centers, I mm-hmm. should say, in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, in fact, only one left in Mississippi.
Yeah.
And it is not us. Jackson Women's Health in Jackson is the single only abortion provider in the state of Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's something like 99% of counties don't have access to
right.
an abortion provider. And so, you know, when you think about these bans and who they affect, unsurprisingly, it's, you know, the most marginalized among us, right? It's people who don't have the resources or the means to take off of work, find childcare, because the majority of people who receive an abortion already have children. So they have to find childcare. They have to travel across the state or maybe cross state lines, and then have the procedure. And in most of these states, there are also waiting periods, medically unnecessary waiting periods that are enforced on patients. So
mm-hmm.
they have to go do all of that twice.
Twice, yes.
Just to make decisions about their own bodies and their own futures.
Yeah, and I think it's important to let people know, people that feel as though, well, we should just have the states decide on their own. whether or not, you know, leave it up to the states. I've heard that argument as well. Well, what that presumes is that people that need an abortion will have the resources available to go to another state to get it. That's not the case. That's not always the case
at
all.
That's exactly right. People with means and people with resources mm-hmm. always have had access to all of the health care that they need, and they always will.
Right.
It's folks in low-income communities, and it's primarily people of color who are so affected by these bans.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, because I did want to kind of broaden the discussion a little bit about Planned Parenthood. So why don't you share with our listeners, what are the other services that Planned Parenthood offers?
Yeah, so Planned Parenthood has been around for over 100 years. And we provide the full spectrum of reproductive health care services. And that includes abortion, that includes STD testing and treatment, cancer screenings, birth control, annual well woman exams.
Mm-hmm.
And we also provide sex ed. We're actually the largest provider of sex ed in the country. And then we advocate for reproductive health and reproductive rights. But above all, we just believe that all people, no matter who you are or where you come from or who you love or how much money is in your bank account, you deserve bodily autonomy and you deserve access to compassionate, non-judgmental reproductive health care.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are doing everything in our power to make sure that everyone in Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi has access to just that.
Yeah, well, and you probably have the hardest region in the country.
They don't make it easy, Greg.
No, they don't. They don't meet. And I assume you're traveling all the time, too.
That's right,
if
yes.
You're in the three different states.
We are road warriors. I'm consuming more Taco Bell than I'd like to admit.
My partner loves Taco Bell.
It's kind of the low-key, like, vegan go-to place for fast food because you can kind of hack the menu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I'm trying to diet and I go there, I end up getting a bean burrito.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, that's certainly beside the point here. Sorry. You are listening to Alternative Perspectives, and this is Greg Boston, and we're speaking about abortion with Barbara and Latrell with Planned Parenthood. So I did want to ask you about the pills or whatever, the morning after pills. Like, I don't really know anything about how that works. So
I am not a doctor.
Right. What are the options that are available?
Some people confuse emergency contraception with an abortion. It is not the same thing.
Okay.
So we do offer emergency contraception.
What does that mean?
That means if you've had sex and a condom broke or you didn't use a condom, you didn't have protection, you weren't using some form of contraception,
mm-hmm.
and you were afraid that you might get pregnant and you weren't intending to, you could go to one of our health centers or to your doctor and get emergency contraception, which is commonly called Plan B or the morning after pill, and you can take that to prevent a pregnancy from occurring.
Okay. All right. And is that something that a lot of people are availing themselves of lately, I would imagine, more so than before?
Well, actually, I think what we've seen is a bit of a spike in terms of people coming to get long-acting reversible contraceptives like IUDs.
Oh.
So those are contraceptive methods that last years. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've seen an influx of people coming in to make sure that they have their IUD in place.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to a generous donor, we were actually able to give out free IUDs at a couple of our health centers for a period of time. So that was really a great thing for us to be able to do for folks, regardless of their ability to pay.
Explain for our listeners, I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there about who a typical person is that you see, like your typical...
We see...
everyone, right?
Everyone. I mean,
yeah.
Really, truly.
Yeah.
Our goal is to, provide compassionate reproductive health care for all humans.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter who you are. So, and honestly, that's that's who we see. It kind of depends on the neighborhood too. Here in Georgia, we have 3 health centers. Mm-hmm. We have one in Gwinnett, one in Cobb, one right around the corner in East Atlanta.
All right.
And so we're seeing all ages, all gender identities. We're seeing, you know, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say, so now, are these people that are usually there because they can't afford?
No, not necessarily.
Yeah.
Also, you know, it's a lot of folks who support Planned Parenthood, have gone to Planned Parenthood since college or since their high school days, and have fond memories of Planned Parenthood and have a soft place in their heart.
Yeah.
You know, we have also had some folks come in to get care with us as their way of giving back.
You know? Oh, wow. So do you charge for services, or is it a sliding scale? How does that work?
That's a good question. It's yes, so we charge for services, but mm-hmm. we meet you where you are, and yeah. regardless of your insurance status, you can come get care at Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and this is Alternative Perspectives. You are listening to Greg Bossen and Barbara Ann Littrell. I'm Greg. She's Barbara Ann. and we're talking about abortion and Planned Parenthood in particular, and the services that are provided. I do want to spend the last little bit kind of helping people know where to turn for that. We're all about education here at WRFG. So we will be right back.
Underwriting opportunities for your business or organization. Your announcement includes business name, location, contact info, and service provided. Please contact the WRFG business office if interested. The number is 404-523-3471.
WRFG 89.3 FM Atlanta, Alternative Perspectives. Stay tuned. And we're back. That, of course, is Blue Monday. Takes me back. Who did Blue Monday? Do you know? No. Barbara Ann is much younger than I am. How old are you, Barbara? No, don't tell me how old you are. Unless you just want to.
Not particularly.
Okay. All right. For those of you that are just joining us, you are listening to Alternative Perspectives on WRFG 89.3 FM. This is a progressive radio station, and Alternative Perspectives is the only radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting the queer community. We're taking a little side tour here because of the abortion bill that has just been passed by, it was passed last month. House Bill 481 by Governor Brian Kemp has signed it. And so we have Barbara Ann Luttrell here from Planned Parenthood to talk a little bit about, well, we've been discussing the bill. But I guess I'm wondering, well, first of all, have your donations increased, I wonder, since all of this has happened?
I don't know. I know that we've heard a lot in the media lately about some of the abortion funds around mm-hmm. the Southeast having a spike in donations. Mm-hmm. We've certainly had, an increased interest, mm-hmm. Both in terms of volunteer interest. And I told you we've had hundreds and hundreds of calls flooding our call center.
Yes.
And we've had a lot of media interest. So all eyes have been on Georgia and this draconian bill.
Yeah. Have you had any threats lately? I wonder, do you get threats often, or
we have there is a small minority of folks who are vehemently anti-abortion mm-hmm. and vocally anti-abortion, and because they are so vocal and visible
mm-hmm.
they often seem like more than there actually are. But we have protesters outside of our health centers for that reason. We have patient escorts
every day
trained
every day
who are trained to escort patients into the health center. I have the unique pleasure of receiving some of the emails and Facebook messages from some of these anti-abortion folks. So
they
make themselves known.
I'm sure that they do. And actually, I think that that brings us to a point that I want to cover. So I guess I'm interested, if somebody is listening and they're interested in getting perhaps finding out about abortion or getting any sort of reproductive health screening or where they can go to get contraceptives or something like that. So your website, what is the website?
PPSE.org, like Planned Parenthood Southeast, PPSE.org.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, that the website has information about all of the services we provide. So abortion, contraceptive counseling. So if you are interested in getting birth control, when you come in and you meet with the doctor, they go over all of your options and what works best for you and your lifestyle and your work schedule and, you know, your insurance or your whatever,
mm-hmm.
So that you make sure that you have the method that works best for you. STD testing and treatment, your annual exam, cancer screenings, all the things. So all the information is on that website.
I mean, I feel like it would just be, I think it would just be a smart thing for someone to do, for a woman to do, to check into these things. I think it's important ahead of time.
And it's not just women. I mean, all people need to be in charge of their own reproductive health.
Yes.
Because that's a big way that we're in charge of our futures.
Right? Yes. So. Yes. Now, when you say that, what do you mean? Do you mean that couples come in, or do you mean we're talking about men who come in with issues related to...
Men come in, people of all gender identities, not just women who have uteruses.
So you handle issues related to men's reproductive organs as well?
Oh, yeah.
See, isn't that funny? That I would not even know that.
I know. It's because of all the pink. We
right. Well, I'm gay, so we're fine with
pink.
Yeah,
we use a lot of pink, but we know all people are welcome in.
Yeah, definitely. And you were saying that there's a social media that people can go to.
Yeah, so Planned Parenthood Southeast Advocates, that's the advocacy and electoral arm of Planned Parenthood Southeast, has Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and mm-hmm. and those platforms really have all of the information about upcoming events, ways to get involved, mm-hmm. volunteering, or, you know, any of the advocacy pieces of this work. Especially now, we've had a lot of interest in that, given that, I think people are, you use the phrase shaken, I think.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
About the attacks on reproductive health that we've seen. Historically, Georgia's been a place where people across the Southeast come for care. And so you know, that's why nationwide people have been so shocked by the recent passage of this ban. And that's why we've had really international attention on Georgia over the past couple of months.
Yes.
Not for, you know, moving forward or progressing in any way, but for taking the state and its people backwards.
Well, I have to tell you, Barbara Ann, I mean, elections, they have consequences,
they
you know.
Matter.
This is, you can trace this directly to the election in 2016. You know, this never would have happened, but Donald Trump getting into office allowed him to put Supreme Court justices that were given to him by the Federalist Society that were specifically anti-abortion.
Well, and you know, we can actually trace this back to just 2018.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, you know, Governor Kemp used voter suppression tactics to get elected.
Yes.
And now he used this bully pulpit to push this legislation through, despite the fact that we know it doesn't represent the will of the people. So,
no, the majority of the population is pro-choice, correct?
Supports access to safe, legal abortion, more than 70% of the population, and that includes Republicans and independents, and even a majority of Trump voters support access to safe, legal abortion, at least in some cases.
Oh, yeah.
So this absolutely does not represent what the people of this state or the people of this country want.
Well, I remember right before or right after that election in 2016 talking to people who voted for Trump, who were pro-choice, and felt as though, well, you know, don't listen to what he says. You know, Roe Wade is safe. You know, there's not going to be a concern there. And here we are.
And here
we
are.
So nobody knows what's going to happen. One of these cases or more will go to the Supreme Court. This will happen. I guess one of the good things about it is that, I mean, it's an issue that still has not been resolved in this country since Roe became law. It's still, well, I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it's just a vocal minority. I mean.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting. I think it represents us being the, you know, the country or this, you know, beyond just Georgia, but our inability to really recognize women's rights and bodily autonomy. Like abortion is the issue now, but not that long ago, it was access to birth control. And just before that, it was the right to vote. And just before that, it was the right to own property. So all our eyes are on abortion, and that is the issue at hand. But it isn't about abortion. It's never been about abortion. It's about reconciling that we are equal human beings.
Yeah, and I think, and speaking as a man, you know, and I'm not so naive as to think that I would be able to understand. And I don't think that most men are able to really get it. I mean, to feel it in their gut, what it's like to be a woman in this country and in this world, and what it's like to have, you know, basically some stranger or some giant group of politicians tell you what to do with your body. I don't think that men even want to think about what that's like, you know.
They don't have to.
Right.
And and I think it's impossible for us to really truly put ourselves in anyone else's shoes. You never know what's going on in another person's life. You never know their circumstances, which is why each individual should be making decisions for themselves, and you shouldn't be making them for other people. I shouldn't be making them for other people, and certainly politicians shouldn't be making them for the people of this state.
Well said. Well said. One more thing. I think you did say you had some statistics on, were you able to find something on first, second, third trimesters?
Oh, yeah. You asked specifically about the makeup of
Because just so that people understand what we're talking about, because there's many people that get very concerned about these third trimester abortions.
Yeah.
So what are those stats?
Sure. So two-thirds of abortions occur at 8 weeks of pregnancy or earlier. 89% of abortions occur in the first 12 weeks of the pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And so it's just about 1% of abortions that happen, you know, later in pregnancy.
And in those cases, what's going on, would you say?
It's often it's fetal anomalies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a health crisis
mm-hmm.
for the pregnant person or mm-hmm. for the fetus.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, honestly, it is the most devastating situation a woman or a person finds themselves in. And it is unconscionable to make it a political issue.
Totally.
And to accuse, you know, you've seen a lot of this misinformation floating in the media about infanticide, but it's nothing more than propaganda intended to divide us.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is that these are healthcare crises that people face, and that we should support people in those most desperate times of their lives.
Definitely, definitely. And I think that's a good place to end. Thank you so much, Barbara Ann, for coming and speaking with us. Barbara Ann Luttrell with Planned Parenthood Southeast.
Thank you, Greg.
And you are very welcome. And thank you so much to our listeners for listening to us babble on about abortion. And the phone did not ring once during this entire time, which is quite surprising to me. Anyway, I want you guys to have a wonderful week, and I will be with you next week. And as always, like I say, this time what I want you to do is find somebody that you love and give them a hug. All right? Give them a hug this time and tell them that you love them as well. All right? Catch you later.